Welcome to the fourth preseason Supercoach Coach podcast for season 2020. My name's Marcus, and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
Good day, mate. We got some footy back.
Indeed. And did you watch the Bushfire Appeal game?
Yeah, I did. It was a weird game just because, like, All Stars dominated the first half of the first three quarters and looked amazing. And then Vic sort of, the last 10 goals, I think it was 10 goals to one or something at the end, just came off a bit weird. But, good to see all the guns out there having a game. I don't reckon it'll work every year, but wouldn't mind seeing that game every few years.
Yeah, I think it'd actually help if it was more regular and you felt like you had a bit more to play for to represent your side each season and maybe even the ledger if there was sort of historical record. But, yeah, good night nonetheless. The crowd certainly got pretty rowdy at Marvel Stadium where I was sat. Finding ways to entertain themselves on top of the footy. Mexican waves and huge beer snakes and security regularly getting involved to calm people down. So that was interesting.
I don't think that that's a good advertisement for the game then, because that means that they weren't really into what was actually happening out on the field. Because I think the reason why you don't see that sort of stuff at many AFL games is because there's just so much happening and the crowd's really focused on the game.
Yeah, it felt much more like a cricket crowd, really. Yeah, be interesting to see if they go it again next year. This week's going to be a pretty big episode. So last week we covered the top six finishes in terms of average and total points in the back line and forward line from season 2019. And this week we're going to again go back to the backs and forwards, but we're going to spend our time instead looking at the players that present a little bit of value, not quite in that top six echelon from last year, but may have been in seasons past or maybe trying to get there. We're going to look at the best options in terms of those that are most highly selected at time of recording this, and also a few additional blokes that Mark, you identified for us to have a bit of a chat about.
Should be an interesting show, mate, just because last week we told people not to pick any of the players that we were talking about, basically.
Yeah, a theme of, I think, the first three shows is that there's rucks and midfielders that seem to be standing out above the rest, and both in terms of price and obviously the scoring from last year. That means we probably want to invest a bit of money in making sure that we have these absolute best of the best, top echelon type scorers. And when we looked to the forward line and the back line last week, we noticed a bit of a dearth of really secure premium options that weren't overpriced or didn't have injury risk or weren't too old. And so as a result, I think this week's going to be pretty important because we're going to spend a lot of time, therefore, looking for what the alternates are, not just because it fits forward and back line structure, but because it also potentially allows us to be a little bit more generous in our spending in the midfield where we tend to like to play a little bit more money in there. So plenty of interesting discussion today, no doubt. And I'm expecting a little bit more counter opinions and contrarian opinions between the two of us than the consensus we achieved last week. But before we get into the show, just a few plugs as we do each week. Don't forget patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you're looking to support the show. We've got two eps left. We've been doing a bonus ep for each ep that we've recorded for everybody else. And if you sign up for our Patreon group, you're also eligible for the $250 group prize at the end of the season. And probably not quite this week, but next week we'll be looking at doing a Supercoach Coach Patreon team picker. So giving you a bit of a template, or giving our patrons a bit of a template for selecting their teams as a bit of a thank you if you decide to sign up. And generally, that's a pretty good launching pad for a good start to the season. So if you're interested, please get involved. Otherwise, the podcast page will contain details to join our Supercoach Coach group. Get involved in our Supercoach Coach Discord channel or the forum if you're keen to get involved in participating and chatting Supercoach with others in the community. And we've also got the veterans application now open if you're interested in joining a private group of elite coaches that are very invested in sharing their knowledge with each other and bettering themselves with some high-level strategy. So that's enough of a plug for now. Let's start with some of these backline options, Mark. And the first one that we're going to start off with is possibly the most talked about one, if not second most talked about defender for season 2020, and that's Dan Houston, off the back of playing a lot of midfield time last year. the first game of the preseason, he actually did play midfield as well, and he scored about 100 points in a pretty decent showing, heaps of tackles in the midfield. How do you feel about Dan Houston, Mark? He seems like the type of player that we like to pick, a guy who's available in the back line but is actually playing midfield minutes generally, leads to them being more favourable selections.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, he's a lock. He was in my first team. He hasn't left. Just those extra midfield minutes, and he's scoring at the end of last year. Bodes well for him, I think, entering his fourth season. He's missed one game in the last 2 years. And I think that that's just, at his price, he just presents enough value that he'll definitely be in my starting team at this stage. With that said, I don't think he's probably going to be a season-defining pick. I don't see him sort of averaging 110 and completely destroying the people that don't pick him. I just think he's a really, really solid selection and provides bit of durability at a good price with good scoring potential and a fairly high base, I think. So, yeah, for me, absolutely locked into my team. What about you?
I've certainly been tempted, and he's sitting in my side more weeks than not, but he still hasn't reached those premium heights yet. He averaged about 90 last season. Consistency probably a little bit in his favor, generally scores 80 plus, but still did have a few low games, and some of those happened and got peppered in the second half of the season. So, you know, some 50s and 60s around about three quarters of the way through the season, round 15, round 16. And his upside isn't particularly high yet either. Generally, you want a guy who can be scoring 130 pluses to help offset if he has the likelihood of also having some poor games here or there. So I'm a little bit concerned that by the end of the season, he won't end up averaging 100, but it might be closer to 95. And if he goes from an average of 90 to 95, but isn't a top six defender, does that mean he doesn't potentially end up as an absolute lock or a brilliant selection by the end of the year? I'm not entirely sure. So just presenting some counterpoints, but I think most people have him locked away, but it hasn't quite been as simple as that for me. Do you have any other doubts or concerns about him, Mark?
I think that the scores you're talking about happened just pre-role change for him. So I guess it would just be around his role and whether he can consistently produce in that role and stay there for the whole season. I have a reasonable amount of faith that he can. My only concerns are that he's probably not uber cheap and he's unlikely to average over 110. So that's enough to put some doubts there. But relative to the other options, I feel he's a bit more of a reliable pick.
All right, next guy that we're going to talk about is Lockie Weller. He's priced at $481,100. Played for Gold Coast, played in the Bushfire Appeal game. Did you catch a glimpse of him then, Mark?
Yeah, he looked pretty good. I think he was one of the top scorers in that game for the All-Stars.
And you actually put him on this run sheet because in terms of his selection numbers, he's in under 5% of teams selected so far. So what has you attracted to the Weller selection, mate?
Until last year, it showed a fair bit of durability. I think that number two draft pick coming into his sixth season, they gave up a heap for him anyway. I think maybe it was they gave up pick number two for him. So they've invested a lot in Lockie Weller. I think that they expect him to be a key plank of their team. Looked really smooth playing last year. Did alternate between halfback and midfield a lot last year. I'd be hoping for a bit more of a midfield role from him. Very, very similar to Houston, right? So they have very similar averages from last year, very similar prices, and potentially a bit of a role change, more midfield time coming into this year. So I actually don't have him as far behind Houston as maybe the rest of the Supercoach community does based on selection numbers. With Houston being much more publicized and much more popular, I think the main concern with him would be can any Gold Coast player score over 100 or average over 100 this year? So, because there hasn't been much of a history of that happening other than really Gary Ablett. So that's probably my biggest concern on him, but I probably have him almost as a toss-up with Houston.
Yeah, certainly at the half-back position, when your team's coming last, it's pretty rare to find any players managing a 100 average through that. In the midfield, I think that's certainly possible, and we've seen it even with some young guns early in the Gold Coast days manage to either do that or get pretty close to that. So I don't mind the selection, but I have Houston ahead of him just because he's going to have an easy run of it with his team being a little bit better performing than Lockie. Lockie was very consistent last year. in terms of the Supercoach points that he did bring in. Most of his scores were 80 plus. He had, I think, three games only that were in the 50 to 60 bracket. Hit the ton about five, six times. So he certainly showing the right upward trajectory.
I think the one concern with Weller compared to Houston is that Houston did have a couple of scores over 120 last year, whereas Weller was just that more consistent, had more scores over 100, but his high score of the year was 110. So if he is going to boost that average up towards the 100 mark, he's going to need to have a couple of big games in there somewhere.
All right, next player, and quite a lot in this price point, is Jordan Dawson, 467,800. Just played in GWS versus Sydney without Jake Lloyd, certainly thrived. Only had the 19 disposals, but had seven tackles, which is pretty impressive, and was pretty effective with his disposals as well. Scored 125 Supercoach points, so big game from Jordan. Is he in the same echelon as the two guys we've talked about so far, or is the fact that Dawson's probably slated to play a little bit more at halfback, does that sort of count against him compared to the other two guys?
Yeah, I think that it does count against him. They didn't have Lloyd, so that made his role a bit different to what it really will be in the season. I think that, look, I mean, his scoring from last year was really, really good, and it's a really great trajectory. I think coming into his fourth season but only having 25 games behind him, so he's probably half the games of Houston and quite a bit behind Weller, and I think I'd find it pretty hard to pick fourth-year player with 25 games experience at that price personally in a Sydney side that looks like they might struggle a little bit this year. And he played without Lloyd. So scoring's great. The numbers are definitely there. And he had the preseason performance, so it's hard to make much of a case against him. I just have him number three out of the ones we've talked about so far.
He did move from playing more on the wing to at halfback in the second half of the year. And after that move, I think, was it five out of his eight games on the run home, he scored 93 and above. Lowest score during that time was a 66. Even when he gets a small amount of disposals, he still seems to be able to do a little bit with it. He's a goal kicker as well. Did manage 15 last year. I think I agree with you in general in saying that he's less likely to start my team than the other two, but I can certainly understand why people are paying close attention to him. Similar to Houston, his finish to the year indicates that upward trajectory that you might want to jump on.
Yeah, I think I just don't like his risk profile with that inexperience at 467. I'd probably want a bit more of a discount.
No, it's a very fair point. And actually, we've got another Sydney bloke who, together with, you know, Rampy, Dawson, Lloyd, is all fighting for the halfback points, and maybe that counts against them. Callum Mills, 444,000. He's actually burnt enough people that I think he's only in under 5% of teams again this year. So another guy who you've chucked into the mix, and fairly so because of his talent. And he played in the Bushfire Appeal game as well, sort of speaking to how highly rated he is at such a young age. Do you think this year's the year he converts that into a bona fide Supercoach scoring mark?
Probably not, to be honest. I thought he was awesome in the All-Stars game, took a lot of their kickouts as well. I think that he may just have a bit of a cap on his scoring if he's playing off that halfback, and I think that he's probably too good not to be in the back line at Sydney at the moment, and they've got too many other midfielders that can play in there. So disappointingly, he may get up to a 90 average, but he may not enter that real premium range this year. I just think he's an absolute gun, and one day he will become Supercoach relevant.
Upside, a real problem for Callum. He only had three scores in the ton last year, which was very surprising. It wasn't like he was scoring 50s and 60s regularly. Like, he'd fairly often get into the 70s and 80s. But if you don't have that ability to go big and help balance out some of your smaller scores, then breaking out to a premium type average is certainly very challenging and something else to consider with Callum Mills in the back line. All right, next player, and not probably, is the most highly anticipated backline selection for 2020, and that's because we've missed him for a couple of years. Sam Doherty, 436,100. Do we even talk about him, Mark, or just slot him straight in, lock?
Well, I think that some people are questioning his selection a little bit just because he's had 2 years out. Like, that's a really, really long time, and that will likely impact him to some degree. I just think that at 430,000, like, the risk is pretty low. He's averaged over 108 in his last two full seasons. If he gets anywhere near 100 at that price, you'd be pretty happy. Got through his first NAB game, may not have dominated the scoring, but that's enough.
I wouldn't want to overthink this selection. 114.7 was his 2017 average. So we're talking a guy who can average midfield numbers in the back line. Even a poor version of Sam Doherty can outscore a majority of the backline options available.
Sorry, just that if you get him, if you take him and it's you get it wrong, he's probably not going to burn you too hard. But if you don't take him and you get it wrong, he could really, really burn you. So I think that that is something you need to consider with a pick like that.
Good point there, Mark. All right, next guy, Connor Blakely from Fremantle. He's priced at $411,500. So certainly still at a price bracket where you would need him to hit premium numbers, at least 95 to be happy. Maybe he doesn't need to clear 100 with some value on offer there. 23 years old, five, six seasons now in the AFL, and therefore potentially a breakout candidate. He's not in above 5% of starting selections at the moment, so definitely a bit of a smoky for now. Not that that should be a particular driver of decision-making from our chats with Happy Raccoon last week, but Mark, you've put him on the run sheet, even though he hasn't hit premium numbers. He also hasn't even played 22 games so far in his career, so certainly a riskier prospect. What has you tempted about Connor?
I think it was the 89 average in his third season. Showed a progression up that if he had have stayed fit, that may have kept going up towards that 100 mark. I think coming off a 75 average, he definitely presents quite a lot of value. It's just whether he can go all the way up into a premium status rather than getting back into that 85, 90 average. I think that probably durability concerns are a bit too high. Like, not only has he not played 22, he's most ever was 17. There's some role issues potentially where we're really uncertain about what the Fremantle midfield will look like this year. There's some value there. It's just it's probably just not quite enough.
I wonder what the change of coach means to Fremantle's game style and whether or not that adds to concern for potential breakout players.
I think that they've got a whole bunch of other players that they're potentially looking to play through the midfield, whether that be Blake Akers or Brayshaw or Sarong and the other new recruits that they've had over summer. So I think that that probably affects Blakely in that is he actually going to be in the starting sort of top five or six midfielders for Fremantle? And there's probably just enough doubt there that it does actually affect decision-making with this one.
Especially at that 400K mark, you want to be taking the safest risky option. That price tag inherently carries risk and it should be more risk minimization exercise. Next player, Grant Birchall. Haven't seen him for a really long time. 292,700 now at a new club in Brisbane. Do you see yourself taking a risk on a guy who's that old? And really, in terms of his premium scoring history, has reached there in parts, but hasn't been the picture of consistency in terms of being a bona fide top six defender as well. But under 300K is what we look at for a step ladder position, and he at least fulfills that. What do you reckon, Mark?
It's a little bit of an awkward price because close to 300,000, you need him to average like 85 plus, I would say, and play every week, which is a really big ask for someone who's played 8 games in 3 years. So, I mean, he has had that 85 average quite a bit before. I could see him pumping out decent scores, but surely they're going to have to treat him pretty carefully and he won't play every week. I think that his risk of an in-game injury is just too high given his history. So pretty hard no for me, I think.
I definitely agree with that. He's, interestingly enough, in a fair few teams so far. So just want to probably scrutinize the selection a little bit more rather than just looking at the value. Not certain that he's going to end up being a poor selection, but he's in 7% of teams at the moment. If you're willing to take him, you're at least accepting and understanding the injury risk as well, and you want to balance that out with the rest of your team. Now, another guy who's been affected by injury and therefore comes with a very cheap price tag is Dylan Roberton, 260,400. And I think most of the Supercoach, or not just Supercoach, AFL community are hoping that he comes back and can get back to his former best self. After having a bit of a heart scare the last two seasons, very, very unfortunate type of injury. Now, before he went down, Mark, he was pretty close to premium type numbers. I don't think he managed it for a full season, but in patches, he's even averaged 105 in previous seasons. Dylan, Robert, and what do you reckon? Could you take a risk on his injury profile, and is the upside tempting enough?
Yeah, I think it is, to be honest. I think the price is a little bit better. So 260 rather than 290 actually does make quite a bit of difference in just that they can earn more by averaging the same. And played through the practice match the other day, played really well. There's some concerns in the sense that he hasn't really played for 2 years and it was a heart condition, so that could potentially come up at any time. But everything I've read says that he's done the whole preseason and he's ready to go. A lot of changes to the St Kilda side since then, a lot of changes to their side over summer, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I think at 260, with potentially some issues around how many rookies we're going to have, that's the sort of player that I like. Like a previous premium, about 250,000 is generally where I've probably had the most success with mid prices in the history of this game. So, yeah, really, really strong chance of starting my team. And hopefully he just plays 5 to 8 weeks really well at the start, scores really well, and I don't need a full season out of him.
At 260,000, you just need him to spike up enough in price to side swap him. And that's another reason why Dylan Robinson is potentially attractive, is that he wasn't necessarily the most consistent player, but his upside was certainly there. 2017, he had a 119, he had a 126, he had a 149, a couple other games above 110. So his ability to go big as a halfback player is certainly there, and that's because good foot skills can be damaging with the ball. If anything, as a super coach, I try and manufacture situations to pick in guys that are under 300K, so I won't need to be asked twice to pick Dylan Robinson, I don't think. All right, that's it in terms of the backline options we had scheduled to talk about, Mark. Probably Stephen Hill's the only other one who's a def forward DPP player, and the only guy we're going to talk about today who's under 200K as a starting price tag is so injury prone, and it's got to be sort of one of the chief concerns with picking up a guy like Stephen Hill, because outside of that, he's basically priced like a rookie is. What do you reckon about Stephen Hill, Mark?
In 56% of teams, I'd be surprised if that doesn't even go a bit higher by round one if he's selected. Had a really good summer. The all reports are that he's moving really well. Former premium numbers in the position. I think you just got to take the risk.
Has averaged 96 on a couple of occasions earlier on in his career. So I guess the question is, backline or forward line? Where do you see super coaches needing the most help in terms of cheap options? The backline or the forward line?
A lot depends on how you feel about a lot of these players at the end of the show, I think. Which position, forward or backline, do you want to pick the most of these value premiums? And so he would go into the other end. So if you like more of the forwards than you do the defenders, then you put Hill in defense or the other way around. And it probably depends a little bit on where the rookies show up. At the moment, I have the same amount of rookies as in forward and defense, but I probably see more potential in the defensive line with rookies. So you'd just have him flexible and he would move depending on where the rookies show up, really.
Now, I just wanted to compare the backline and forward line while we're on the topic of where do you see the value in terms of the top options from 2019, how they averaged, and how that potentially influences what you want to chase after in 2020. So the top six defenders from 2019 averaged 98.2 and above, and there were 11 players that averaged 95 and above in the back line. Whereas in the forward line, the top six average is 93.9 and above, and only four players averaged 95 or higher. That is a pretty big difference between the back line and the forward line, and I don't think I've actually seen such a weak forward line in terms of starting options from the average the year prior. How do you feel that informs where you want to take those value selections to start this season, Mark?
There's been a bunch of players that have been removed from the forward line that would have potentially averaged over 100. Like a really good example would be Menegola. I think if he was available as a forward, he'd probably be in a lot of teams going into this year. We've lost a lot of those previous forwards. We also talked about last week that the defenders have potentially gone up in their averages overall as a result of the new scoring, and so they have a higher ceiling to aim for. And I think the way that that informs my decision-making is that so there's a lot of defenders, as we talked about last week, that are just not presenting value, so they're already maxed in price, which means I'm less likely to pick those premiums yet, and hopefully they'll have a down game and I'll be able to get them a better value later on. And it also means that in the forward line, you can take more of a punt because they might not need to average quite so much in order to be premiums in that position. So you can take a punt on a player averaging 95 and be okay with it for 400,000, whereas it's a little bit harder to do that in defense. So I think overall what it makes me do is be more willing to take a risk in the forward line.
I think I agree from the point of view that the basement is lower. The part that gets potentially a little bit challenging is that the risk factor for the individual players that we're looking at in the forward line, for me anyway, feel a little bit scarier than in the back line. Even though they've got a lower bar to clear, I'm less confident they might be able to clear that bar than some of the options that we reviewed in the back line. You know, Houston, Weller, Doherty, Roberton, like those are four guys that probably stood out from the bunch based on our conversations. And I have reasonable confidence in most of them at least trying to hit that 95 plus mark, whereas looking at the forward line, some of the options we're about to discuss, it feels much, much riskier prospect. So why don't we run through some of these forward options to crystallize what we're talking about and help navigate our listeners through it. And we'll start off with one of your I would say one of your favorite players, Mark. I know you've selected him in Supercoach previously, as recently as in the last couple of seasons, I think. Jordan Dugowie, 473,800. Now, with a lower bar to clear, will you go back there, mate?
So sometimes you can be right in recognizing that someone's going to be a gun, but they still don't translate it to Supercoach scoring. Bit like Callum Mills last year, Jordan Dugowie, and it's hard to get that first season where they break out totally right. I think that my concerns with Dugowie are that he's a bit like Toby Green, right? He's so good as a forward that he's probably going to be played more as a forward now, and he's just a crucial part of the Collingwood forward these days, so I don't expect him to play a heap more midfield time. So I think that in that respect, you almost treat him as a bit of a key forward in the sense that he's going to have a player playing on him the whole game, and he may have some fluctuations in his scoring as a result.
Next guy, Hugh Greenwood, is an interesting prospect. Similar to Weller, has moved clubs, available at Gold Coast, but I think we've got pretty good confidence that Greenwood will get a fairly good run in the midfield. How do you see that translating to Supercoach points? Mark hasn't reached premium numbers before, but surprisingly, reasonably highly selected in above 13% of teams at time of recording.
Yeah, and I can understand that. It feels a little bit like the Jordan Dawson pick for me, that just not quite enough evidence for me to go on, but he does have numbers on the board. Like, if you look from a purely numbers perspective, having averaged 85 threes in a row, playing some midfield minutes where it gets sort of 20 possessions a game, but largely as a marking forward, they're decent numbers, and I can understand why people are picking him. There's just not enough there for me personally. Not enough. I just don't have enough belief that he's like a gun in the AFL and that he's going to average above 95. But I'm definitely open to being totally wrong on that. He's just not in my personal consideration, but I can really understand why other people.
Next bloke, Christian Petrarca, 441,300. He had a ripper preseason one, scoring 188 points. He had like 30 plus disposals, had like multiple goals. He was absolutely on fire. Did you watch that game? Were you tempted, Mark? Will you go back to the well?
Yeah. So he's one of those guys that has burnt me in the past, but that's kind of okay. Like, I think that Happy Raccoon, who was on the show last week, one of his comments earlier was that you shouldn't put people in the never again list, that you actually have to be open to going back when the information changes. I think the information on Christian Petrarca has changed. I think that, particularly for me, that his body shape has changed, so that they're potentially looking for him to play more midfield. And I don't need him to play exclusively midfield, but if they boost his time up a decent amount, then I think he can post a pretty good average. 440,000 is a really good price for someone like that. Has a great durability history, and they're missing one game in the last 3 years. Priced at 81, it wouldn't surprise me if he averages 95, and I'd be quite happy with 95, and he probably has some potential to go a bit higher than that. So I had him in before that NAB game, and basically the NAB game made it very, very difficult to take him out after already having him in. Were you swayed?
With us needing to take a little bit more risk in the forward line this year, he seemed like a pretty natural spot to try and put some of that risk into. I think that 95 is potentially doable for him, even if he gets stuck in the forward line, even if he gets stuck as a half forward flanker. Petrarca playing for a team that is in the top eight, I have pretty decent confidence that if not this season, he'll eventually reach a certain level where he can comfortably do that, even not playing full midfield minutes. So you add on to the fact that if he does get shifted into the midfield, 95, you'd almost see as a basement for Petrarca, makes him all the more a tempting proposition. So he is at this stage probably like a 50% to make my side. All right, next guy, Jack Martin, has moved clubs. 420,000, carries plenty of risk. We've not seen him do premium numbers before. Do you think that he can make that conversion at Carlton, Mark? Sometimes a change of scenery is all the impetus a player needs.
Yep. Look, I probably do think it's a percentage chance of happening that he could get up to a 95 average. I don't think he's a 105, 110 average player, at least at this stage in his career. He, in his fourth season, he averaged 81 and was probably ready to break out, but has had some different roles that he's had to play, has had interrupted seasons the last 2 years, only playing 15 and 16 games, which has impacted his ability to sort of make that next step up. So, look, I do think that given his raps coming into his seventh season of AFL, that there could be something he could turn into a pretty decent player and score quite well. I just think the risk factor on that is probably too high for me. Really like him as a player, definitely someone I'll consider in draft. I like barracking for him, but I just think the chances of him making a really big step this year, there's a chance that it'll happen, but there's probably more chance that it won't happen.
I think that aside, my opinion on Martin's ability to stay on the park is super low. So he's actually not really on my radar. Next bloke I actually have in a fairly similar bucket. I've picked him in seasons past. And at this sort of price point, he's worked out pretty well, actually. But Chad Wingard, now at Hawthorn with a proper preseason under his belt, 412,300. He's a guy who's averaged 95 before. He's, I think, already a dual All-Australian at a young age. He's averaged 105 or 110 in certain patches. So he's certainly shown enough of an upside. What do you reckon about Chad, Mark? I know you potentially haven't been as big of a fan as I have in seasons past, so I wonder whether that's just my bias coming through.
I'm really confused by Chad a little bit. He averaged 97-plus twice in his first four seasons. That's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then hasn't averaged over 95 since then. And he was really durable in his first 4 years, but has struggled more his last 4 years. So, like, I wonder whether the Hawthorn medical system can get him fully fit, and if they have, whether they can sort of get him through 21 or 22 games, because he has done that four times out of his 8 years. He's played 21 plus. So he does have that ability and potential to actually do that. And if they do and he gets some midfield time at the Hawks, then I am kind of interested. I'm actually interested. I just can't get a solid read on what his likely scoring is. I think that there's anywhere between 85 and 105, and I'm not sure on his durability. I'm not sure on his role. I did hear that Hawthorn's changed their game style to go a bit faster this year, which I assume would probably benefit someone as skillful as Wingard. So, yeah, there's a lot of factors at play, and he's actually some chance of making my team. I'm really struggling to get a good read on it.
Yeah, I think my biggest question mark on Wingard is how does he fit into Hawthorn's game plan? Any insight into potential of him moving a bit more into the midfield this year?
I think that the fitter he is, the more midfield time he'll get. But I think that, yeah, he is very valuable as a forward, so he'll probably play both positions. It's just whether he can average enough playing as a mid/forward.
All right, now we're going to the players under 400K. There's few more of these in the forward line than there were in the back line, and we're starting off with a guy that I'm actually very, very tempted by to start the season with. And that's weird because it's the only key position forward that we're going to talk about this show, but that's Tom Lynch. 388K. We've seen him average 100 in patches playing for Gold Coast when they had no ball going his way. Last year clearly had an injury interrupted start to the season, but his back end of the season was bloody fantastic. He obviously was huge in the final series, but beyond that, even extending into the second half of the Richmond home and away season, he really started kicking away. He's been in the system for a fairly long time now. This is his 10th season. We've always said that Tom Lynch has that next level potential talent. He averaged 93 for Gold Coast in 2016. Surely by the time he retires, Tom Lynch will have one Supercoach premium season. And why not 2020, Mark? Why not playing for a team who's the favourite to go back-to-back?
He did make some good points, and at 390, he does present a fair bit of discount. And to be honest, he has been in my team once or twice. It's just part of the struggle is that it's his 10th season and he never has had a premium season. Another part of the struggle is that he was pretty awful in that All-Stars game, and seems like that his role's changed from Gold Coast to Richmond, that now he is more of a genuine full forward rather than a centre-half forward, and seems to play a lot deeper rather than running up to the wings and getting the ball up there. And as a result, that might mean he has some lower games as well as some big games. Yeah, look, it's hard to crap on the selection because he played 22 last year despite being injured. A supreme talent. And like you said, the back half of his year was really, really good. So wouldn't surprise me at all if he does come out and do it, but he is unlikely to make my team at this stage.
He's probably ahead of quite a few of the guys that we've talked about for me so far. I think I would have him sort of in the Petrarca type camp. I have him ahead of Wingard and Martin and Gray and DeGoey. So I'm reasonably
ahead of them as well.
All right. Well, it sounds like you might be favoring some of the cheaper selections then, if he's that high up for you. And because we haven't necessarily talked about a heap of forwards that we're very confident on. So the next guy you put on the run sheet, and so I'm interested to hear your thoughts on him, because move of club, Blake Akers, now at Frio, 384,000. He's racked up pretty good numbers playing for St Kilda so far, has showed promise, that type of upward trajectory that indicates he could one day be a premium midfielder. Runs really well, gets plenty of the outside ball, distributes, potentially not as dangerous with the footy as you would ideally like as a more outside player, but certainly racks up enough of the ball that he could still make that transition regardless. What do you reckon about the winger?
I'm sort of hoping that he's going to be a more settled player, being home in WA, and be given a position and just be able to stick to it, because he did get thrown around quite a lot at St Kilda and has missed a lot of games in the last 6 years. So his durability is definitely a bit of a concern. Going into that, I think he definitely racked up the most possessions. Frio Carlton game, and his disposal efficiency was pretty average, but he scored about 110. Really like the way he moves around the ground. And I've definitely seen him play in games where you're like, wow, he is going to be the next superstar of a competition. He's an absolute gun. And then he just hasn't been able to pull it together for weeks and weeks on end. After talking about Tom Lynch, it is a little bit difficult to make a case for Akers over Lynch, mainly because of the durability factor. But I think we'll definitely see him average a lot more this year. He's averaged 88 passed and has gone on a couple of big patches of scoring and has had some really big games. I would be pretty confident that he'll average more than 85 this year, probably more than 90 this year. And so, yeah, I think he's actually a pretty good selection. He's definitely in consideration for my team. There is a lot of risk attached to him just because we haven't seen him do it before in 6 years, and he hasn't played 22 games before.
After last week, we did talk about not seeking out points of difference for the sake of it, but should note, Akers is only in 2% of teams at the moment, so he will be a unique and will be uniquely performing for you if you do end up picking him, but he's one that's certainly much lower on the radar for mine. His teammate is at a similar price point, and I'm potentially a little bit more tempted into him. Andrew Brayshaw, 382,800. Since joining the comp, probably has required a little bit more weight to have a little bit more of an influence. And in the offseason, he's put on a fair bit of weight. All reports are coming out from Fremantle indicate that physically he's probably more ready to take that next step, which has quite a few coaches potentially excited. He's in 7% of teams at the moment. What do you reckon about Brayshaw, Mark? Do you think it's a bit too early for breakout season, or could you see yourself going there?
Look, I've definitely considered him. He is in, as you said, 7% of teams, and those sort of players do sort of end up on your radar at some point. Watched him pretty closely last year, and it was largely role-dependent. Like, so he scored reasonably well in most games. Like, he was able to put out a decent score, definitely played a lot more forward and outside on the wings rather than in the middle on a regular basis. And a role change and a body change would make a big difference for that. I think my main concern is you're asking him to make a huge jump. So you're asking his body type and role and new coach to help him go from a 70 average up towards 100, so 95 plus. So that is definitely something that, given his pedigree, given the fact that there are some changes, it is actually possible that happens.
Yep.
But it is a huge ask for that to actually happen. So I probably don't have enough confidence that he will actually be able to make that transition, even though it is possible. I'd say maybe a 20% chance or less.
So speaking to Raccoon last week, strategically, he seems to prefer to hold off on these sorts of plays that present that risk, wait for them to show it in the season and then be happy to trade into them, even if they don't carry the same value. How do you feel about that, and how to approach players like Akers and Brayshaw, who are a little bit more questionable in terms of whether or not they'll get there this year?
Yeah, I think it depends on the level of evidence that you have that they can actually make that jump. So we're asking Petrarca to make a big jump as well, but we feel like we maybe have some more evidence on him. With a Brayshaw, you're expecting a really, really huge jump.
Like, it's faith on talent, right? Like with Brayshaw.
Yeah. Faith on talent and a role change and what you're hearing out of the club about a preseason. And that's a lot of faith to be putting in something like that. And I'm willing to take risks. And I think you have to take risks because you can't always play it safe and only trade into players that you have heaps of information about. We do have to take some risks. We're playing a game of limited information. But this seems to be a case where there has to be a breaking point in that, right? Like, there has to be a case where the chances of them happening is just too low to actually make that jump on that player.
Historically, probably the two of us have been much more hesitant on calling the fast breakout players. We tend to get on them while the season's going. And I think we probably over-index in terms of taking the risk on the fourth, fifth, sixth-year players that are trying to make the breakout from that 400K mark to true premium. Like, I think as a community and between the two of us, like, we certainly prefer the Petrarca types over the Brayshaw types. Like, if you're going to take a risk, pay 60K more, take the 50-year player, hope they break out to 110 versus Brayshaw breaking out from 70 to 95. Like, we prefer to pay the 90 and hope they get to 105.
And that has meant that we've missed plays in the past, like Clayton Oliver's second season, Nat Fyfe's second season. Maybe even Sam Walsh is a really good example this year of someone that could potentially actually average genuine premium numbers, and we miss that selection. But I think that the failure rate on those sort of picks is so high that I'm okay when I miss out on those times that it does actually work.
Same. All right, two final players in the forward line to discuss for this episode. Jack Stephen, 361,700. Moved across to Geelong, missed the first game with a slight niggle. It's a soft tissue, a bit of an old man injury, which is not ideal for Jack Stephen. But this is like a five-time best and fairest. He's obviously averaged premium numbers in the midfield before. Played it up forward last year largely because he was unfit. From all reports, his preseason so far this year has been really good before the little niggle, and he was scheduled to actually play more in the midfield. Chris Scott has been talking about Jack Stephen as an inside midfielder, even though he sees the flexibility in playing him forward as well, but they see him predominantly as an inside midfielder, which I think is pretty telling commentary considering we just lost arguably our best premium inside midfielder from last year, with Kelly being very, very key in our 2019 campaign. So Jack Stephen's probably one of the more popular starting selections for season 2020. What do you reckon about him, Mark? And is he in your team? Because he's in over a quarter of Supercoach teams at time of recording.
Jeez, this is a really tricky one, I'm finding. A lot of really unpredictable factors. I think that the fact that he's had a calf injury really, really complicates it, because that is something that can be a recurring injury for someone that's played more than 10 seasons like Jack. The fact that he missed a lot of games through mental health is probably another complicating factor, because that's just adds a whole level of unpredictability to it. And you'd hope maybe he went home to Geelong to try and help with that. And hopefully that has really worked for him. But it does, if he's going to miss games for that, it's just almost impossible to predict that sort of thing. Yeah, 360, he's averaged 90 plus for 7 or 8 seasons in a row, and was pretty durable beforehand, before last season. And has that averaged over 100 three times as well. I'm really struggling to get a read here. He's probably, what is in 25% of his teams, he's probably a 25% chance of making my team.
Yeah, I think the price point makes it really difficult, because at 361, you ideally want to keep him for the entirety of the season. Yeah. And so I think even if you're confident that he can hit 95, the question mark still remains around his ability to play all 22 games. I think if he got up to the 105 but didn't play every game, that's okay at that price point. But if he only manages 95 and he misses games at that price point, he's actually a poor pick, which I'm guessing is the reason for most people's hesitation on a player like him. We got two players that belong to each of our clubs as the last two selections. So why don't we get off Jack Stephen, then Geelong, and go to Devon Smith and Essendon. He feels like a much more clear-cut picture. Devon Smith, 335,800. Before his injury-interrupted year, 2018 was a super year for Devon Smith. Hit premium numbers. Obviously, last year, injury concerns wiped out the season. But now, plenty of value on offer. Smith is probably one of the most highly selected forward options to start the year. Behind Dusty Martin and Lockie Whitfield, he's the only mid-pricer slash premium who's in above 45% of teams.
It's interesting that you say he's a more obvious selection than Stephen, just because, like, if you look at his scoring history, he's actually only had two seasons above 90, and his durability history in the longer term has actually been a lot worse than Jack Stephen. So based on
he's
their
got
record,
youth on his side, though, right?
Well, what, he's maybe 4 years younger, 3 or 4 years younger than Stephen. So, yeah, that is a factor. I think
I could see Smith getting better this year, whereas I don't see Stephen necessarily getting better. It's more like, can he replicate what he's done before?
Sure. Yeah, that does make sense. And you could see Devon Smith potentially having his best season ever this year if the role eventuates. And I think that's where really the concern is for Smith is, where does he fit into Essendon's on-ball brigade? How much mid-time will we give him? It's interesting that he arrived at the club with the knee injury that took him out last year, and they just sort of managed it through that 2018 season and weren't able to get him through 2019. And now that he's had that fixed, that could lead to potentially better than 2018 performance. And
so no lingering effects anymore from what you know as a supporter?
Nothing that I know as a supporter. But, I mean, you don't always have access to all of that information. So I thought he played a couple of different roles in our first Marsh Series game, and in the second half was a lot more on the ball and got a lot more of the ball as a result. I think the key for Smith is his tackling numbers. He tackles I think he had 20 tackles more than anyone else in 2018. And that was really, really obvious when you went to the games, that he'd always just get that extra hand in on the tackle and he'd just have that awesome chase down ability. So I don't think he's in our sort of best four or five midfielders, which means that he's going to be rotating in and out with a few others. But I think that his tackling pressure will mean that we'll want him up and around the ball as often as possible, because we will want to have that defensive side to our game prevalent as much as possible. I think at 330,000 with a premium history in his last full season, you just can't not pick him. His likelihood of coming off is just too high, and at 330,000, there's just too much value there.
So if we can recap the forwards quickly, I think by the sounds of things, the players that we've gravitated the most towards, Petrarca, Lynch, Stephen, and Smith. Would you chuck anybody else in that banding?
Yeah, I think that they are the ones that we have. I think that I've probably had Akers and Wingard potentially in and out of my side as well.
Cool. So I think that just helps our listeners to narrow down some of these mid-price options. Any final thoughts on the back line and forward line riskier options that we went through today, Mark?
Probably no one that we haven't gone over today is likely to make my side over 300,000 anyway. The Jack Stephen one is probably the biggest call that I'm going to need to make. I think that really impacts the rest of the structure of my whole team.
All right. So we've now essentially done all four positions. And after that, we normally do a rookie and recap show as the final show. But we've actually got 2 weeks' worth of content left before the start of the season. So if you have any suggestions for what you want to hear about, please reach out to us via our social media pipes at SupercoachCoach on Twitter or facebook.com/SupercoachCoach. You can also reach out to us via our Discord or the forum. Or if you're a Patreon, we ask for Patreon-specific questions on there as well for our bonus episode. So please feel free to get in touch. Thanks for your time again, Mark. We're getting closer, closer.
Bring it on.
Let's get crazy.